I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Dr. Rachel Levine, Pennsylvania's health secretary, issued a mask mandate yesterday to be worn if you are physically close to anyone outside of your household. This comes a day after Philadelphia issued tougher restrictions for residents and businesses to be implemented this Friday through the end of the year to slow the spread of COVID-19. These measures cover everything from Eagles games to indoor gatherings. Joining us to walk us through these new guidelines is Philadelphia's health commissioner, Dr. Thomas Farley. Dr. Farley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning. And to our listeners, to join our conversation as we talk about Philadelphia and these new restrictions, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Dr. Farley, before we get to these restrictions, help us understand what is happening in Philadelphia when it comes to an increase in COVID diagnoses, hospitalizations, and deaths.
Well, cases are surging in Philadelphia right now. We're rising at a truly exponential rate, about 4% per day. It means our rates double about every 17 days. And that's affecting our hospitals. We now have over 500 people with COVID in Philadelphia's hospitals. In the spring, we peaked at about 1,000, and we're on track now to get beyond that in December if we don't do something. So we felt we needed to do something to make it so the hospitals were available to all of us if we need it, and to try to limit the number of people who are going to die from this infection.
Is this because the virus is everywhere, or that people are not taking steps to protect themselves and others?
It's a little of both. We thought that the virus might be spread more readily as we got into the fall and winter season, like most respiratory viruses, like influenza does. And sure enough, that's happened. So behavior that was once safe during the summer is no longer safe. The virus is spread more easily in the cold, dry air. And also probably there are people who just got tired of this and haven't been diligent enough to wear masks. We know from our observations that about 80% of people are wearing masks when they are exiting a retail store. That's good, but it's not good enough. There's plenty of people who can spread the infection to each other. So we're doing what we can to try to limit that spread now.
Do you think this could be worse than the spring? Is that what you and others are predicting?
The projections are that this could be worse in the spring in terms of the number of people who die from this and as far as the number of people who are hospitalized from this. I'm hoping that if we take action now that we could prevent that from happening, but the possibility absolutely exists.
Well, let me go through the various restrictions, but let's start with Thanksgiving, which, of course, is next Thursday. What is your advice for families about how to celebrate or not celebrate Thanksgiving?
Celebrate Thanksgiving with your household members only, the people you live with already who you're exposed to every day. We know that's tough because Thanksgiving is typically a wonderful time where we get together with our relatives who don't live with us. People come from far and near to gather, but getting together over a meal right now is very dangerous. And so for the people who don't live in your household, we say, unfortunately, do that over video conference. And, we have reason to think that too many people didn't follow that advice over Halloween, and so I'm very worried about Thanksgiving. So please take it seriously, household members only.
What if you get tested and follow the CDC guidelines as best that you can? Does that in any way make celebrating Thanksgiving together a possibility, or is that just much too risky?
Too risky. My principle is testing is not a substitute for masks or a substitute for distance, because even if you tested negative today and Thanksgiving were tomorrow, you could be turning positive tomorrow because you were exposed, say, a week ago. And it's right around the time when you go from negative to positive that you're probably most infectious. So don't think you can get out of this by just testing beforehand. You really need to be celebrating the event with your household members only.
And what about other indoor events? What are some of the restrictions applied to that?
Well, we think a lot of the transmission is happening at indoor gatherings, including small gatherings of as few as five people that get together to watch a football game on TV. So the restrictions say no indoor gatherings with people other than members of your household. It's a very strong policy on that. We know we can't enforce it, but we want to send that very strong message. No indoor gatherings of any size with people outside of your household.
As you say, you can't enforce it. Is it just an honor system? You're asking Philadelphia residents just to follow the guidelines and do the right thing and be a good person?
That's right. Now, certainly we can try to enforce, you know, large gatherings like in an event space or, you know, a restaurant. But gatherings that happen in people's homes, we're not going to be there. We're just asking for people to do this for their own sake, for the sake of their friends and relatives, and for the sake of the city as a whole.
What about things like restaurants? And, you know, certainly when the weather got warmer, it was possible to eat outside. It's hard to imagine doing that, you know, in the middle of December. But what are some of the restrictions and guidelines for restaurants?
Right. So we will prohibit indoor dining at restaurants because when people are dining, then they're not wearing masks. And if they're not wearing masks indoors, it's a very high-risk situation. To try to help restaurants survive financially through this period, we allow them to do delivery and takeout, and also to do outdoor dining. And sure enough, it's cold out there, but many restaurants have done some very creative things with tents where there's a lot of ventilation there, and so we're allowing them to do that. The outdoor dining is with restrictions. The whole idea there is that you shouldn't be eating with anybody other than your household members, so that you're at most exposing people who you're already with. So that means that the maximum size of a table is only 4 people. And we really want to hold restaurants to that, and we want to hold people to that, only eating with members of every household. So we know this is tough for restaurants, but we're trying to do this to really prevent that area that otherwise could be a very high-risk situation.
We're going to be talking about Montgomery County and its schools, but what are some of the restrictions and guidelines for Philadelphia schools?
So already the public schools in Philadelphia are not doing in-person education, but there are parochial and charter and independent schools that are open. Under our restrictions, the high schools would have to go to online only, but the elementary and middle schools could stay open for in-person education under some very strict safety guidelines, particularly around making sure that everybody's wearing masks at all times.
Gyms, I know, are under some restrictions. Help us understand that.
You know, the overall principle here is we want people to stay home as much as possible, to not get out around people. So, and we know about half of the infections, the people who, person who's infected has no idea how or he or she got infected. So it's spreading a little bit everywhere. So we have some broader restrictions on gyms and museums and libraries. That people really shouldn't be getting out and doing that. The theaters as well would be closed. You really should be staying home now. If you want to go out to for exercise, that's great, but don't go to these indoor settings where spread could occur.
And work from home, if at all possible?
Yeah, we have lots of evidence of it spreading in office-type workplaces. And so these are places where often people don't need to be there. So we're saying unless you absolutely have to be physically in the work site, you should be working from home.
And just to make sure our listeners understand, so things like movie theaters or casinos or museums, game venues, are they open, closed? What are the restrictions on that?
Those are all closed, again, because as part of the consistent message is you need to be staying at home right now and not going to some other indoor space where people outside of your household would be.
And for retail, for malls, what are the guidelines for that?
So people can go to retail stores and they can purchase things. There will be a reduced density of people allowed in those stores. It's 5 people per 1,000 square feet, and we're asking the stores to really enforce that. So you may need to wait outside in order to get in for someone to go out before you can get in, and masks are absolutely required. And likewise for indoor shopping malls. So people can do their shopping in person for Christmas, but we really want everyone to be very careful about doing it safely and spending the minimum amount of time possible doing it.
Dr. Varley, Bill has a question. What advice do you have for families with college students returning home?
You know, the state health department has, and the colleges are requesting that they be tested before they come home. But as I said before, testing itself is not a substitute for masks. If there's any reason to think that the college students might have been exposed, when they come home, they should really try to be separated off from the rest of the family for ideally 14 days so that they, if they were incubating a virus when they came home, that they're not exposing family members. We know that's going to be tough, and it's not going to totally prevent infections, but just be aware that this is spreading a lot on college campuses right now and that they will pose a risk to their families when they come home.
I was reading a list of businesses that can be open to some degree. We're talking about grocery stores, farmers markets, banks, pharmacies, healthcare services, construction, taxis, ride sharing, public transit, hotels, parks, trails, also barbershops and beauty salons. Why are they open knowing how close, you know, a hairdresser gets to a customer?
Yeah, you know, they are close, but they have to operate by appointment only. So there's just that one person there with the person doing the haircutting, and everybody needs to wear a mask at all times so that there's no work on the face, no shaving. They'll just be cutting the hair, and there is at least one study that was done where there were people who did haircuts that had positive tests and they wore masks and their customers wore masks. And nobody got infected. So we do think that can be done safely if they follow all those safety precautions.
Here's a question from Joan. She says, for Christmas, a medical professional told me if you isolate for 6 days, then get a test, if the results are negative, and then you quarantine for 14 more days, you can join with a family member you don't live with. Can you comment on this procedure?
You know, in theory, if you were in quarantine for 14 days and did not get around anybody, then you're safe and you won't be spreading the infection to others.
Right.
Not too many people do that, though. And so I would not recommend that people try to have that be their Thanksgiving plans. It takes an awful lot of discipline, and it's not terribly pleasant to be stuck in a room for 14 days. And so it's better just to stick with people in your household for the holidays.
Here's a question from Paul. How safe are SEPTA trains as public transit is open? Are masks required on SEPTA?
Masks are required on SEPTA. I don't know how actively they are enforced. I would certainly recommend that everybody going on SEPTA wear a mask. I don't know how crowded the cars are. They're probably not terribly crowded. That's a good thing. I will say this, though, that if people are wearing masks on SEPTA and there's a fair amount of air circulation on those trains, that may be safer than carpools. We have had a lot of evidence of spread in carpools, and I think people are making a mistake saying, okay, well, carpool instead of taking SEPTA. And when you're in a car, you're very close to the people around you, and if it's someone you're familiar with, often people take their masks off. SEPTA is I'm sure there's some level of risk there, but if people do it right, that may be a safer way of getting around than some of the other things that people have done.
We're almost out of time here, but these restrictions are in place through the end of the year. How will you determine or evaluate what's going to happen in 2021?
Well, the most important thing we're going to look at is the daily case rate and how that is changing over time. Right now, again, we're in exponential spread. I hope that'll, even if we continue to increase, that maybe won't be exponential in the future and then ultimately top out. Then we'll also be following how many people are in our hospital beds and the rate of that is changing. You know, ultimately, we need to flatten the curve so that the hospitals are available for everyone who needs them. If we feel like we're flattening the curve and we are reducing the rate of increase, then we can talk about when we'll be able to back off. I should also say that, you know, as you mentioned earlier, the vaccines are coming. And
right.
They're not going to instantly change things, but they're not too far off. And so how soon vaccines are going to be available and how many doses we have will play into our decision making.
Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today in Radio Times. Dr. Thomas Farley, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. He is Philadelphia's health commissioner. And after this very short break, we'll be talking with Dr. Valerie Arkush. She's chair of the Montgomery County Board of Commissioners, and they want to have schools go remote over the Thanksgiving holidays. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. All public and private schools in Montgomery County, just outside of Philadelphia, that's pre-K through 12th grade, will be going remote between November 23rd and December 6th because of an exponential rise in cases of COVID-19 and an increased number of hospitalizations. There were protests outside of our guest house demanding that the schools stay open. Dr. Valerie Arkush is chair of the Montgomery County Board of Commissioners, joining us by Skype, here to explain the school decision and what else the county is doing to stem the spread of the virus. Dr. Arkush, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. It's great to be back.
Nice to have you with us. And let me just make sure our listeners can join us as well. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us 1-888-477-9499. Explain for our listeners what's happening in Montgomery County, probably the same question I asked Dr. Farley in Philadelphia, where things stand when it comes to positive testing, hospitalizations, and COVID-related deaths in Montgomery County.
Well, much like the city of Philadelphia, our entire region, Montgomery County included, has seen an exponential increase in cases that started about three and a half weeks ago. And it has been an extremely rapid rise in many ways, much faster than we saw in the spring. And we are seeing an accompanying increase in hospitalizations. So just to give you a sense of that, yesterday we had 206 individuals hospitalized in Montgomery County hospitals. Three and a half weeks ago, we were in the high 30s.
Wow.
So, you know, that quickly, yeah, our hospitalizations have increased. So we're in a situation that is dramatically different from the months of stability that we had here in Montgomery County in terms of very, very low positivity and spread of COVID.
Is that because of the weather? It's getting colder. People are indoors. Again, a similar question to Dr. Farley, or the fact that, people are letting their guard down, or that the virus is just more omnipresent?
Well, I think it's a little bit of all of the above. What we've seen here in Montgomery County is an increase in small social gatherings, particularly private gatherings, many of them around youth sports, sleepovers. Dr. Farley mentioned carpooling. That has been a big issue here. Also, adult private gatherings. We saw a big increase in cases after Halloween with a number of private parties that were held around the county exposing large numbers of primarily school-aged children, but also adults at those events.
But if the problem is private small social gatherings, why essentially move students and teachers online to remote learning over these 2 weeks over the Thanksgiving holiday?
So we have made that decision based on looking at our data here in the county and what has happened after previous holidays, and with the goal, and I want to be very clear about this because I agree with the parents on the goal of having as many students in school being educated as is possible. We have a very different situation here in the county than the city does. We have 22 school districts. They all have their own school boards, and those boards are deciding which schools are offering in-person education and which are not. As a result of that, we have about half of our school districts actually offering in-person education, and then we have a number of private schools and parochial schools that are doing the same. So as of right now, we have 378 students split evenly between public and private schools that have tested positive. We have a 138 staff, again, split between public and private schools that have tested positive. And in meeting with our school superintendents, which we do at least once a week, they are becoming increasingly concerned that they are going to be experiencing what's called functional closures, that they will have so many staff that are out that they will not be able to open the doors. And in fact, we have two school districts and one school that has had to go to 100% virtual for that reason. So our thinking around the holiday is that, number one, we have a whole bunch of college students coming home this weekend. And if kids were still in school next week, that they could be potentially, as you've discussed with Dr. Farley, exposed from college students returning home and carry that virus into the school. And then we know that people are going to gather. Everybody's so tired, and everybody has put off seeing relatives and friends for so, so long. And we just anticipate that people will gather over mm-hmm. Thanksgiving. So our goal was to have a bit of a washout period, about a 10-day period before anyone came back into a school building, which is, you know, one of the ones that are even open offering in-person education, to learn that perhaps somebody at their Thanksgiving dinner had tested positive, and then to get themselves tested, to see if they have any symptoms, you know, not just be back in school right away on Monday morning, potentially causing even wider spread. So we'll be looking at the data closely and we'll see how this goes. But for most students, we're talking about somewhere between 5 and at most 8 days of virtual education, depending on their school's holiday schedule.
You mentioned that there are 22 school districts in Montgomery County. Is there any reason to allow districts to make this decision themselves, dealing with their own students and their own faculty and staff that work at schools? My question is, do you need a one-size-fits-all?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So we have been doing that up until this time. And this decision was, to some degree, predicated on a number of different things that are happening. One, this just exponential growth in the last several weeks in our county, not just in cases, but in hospitalizations. Mm-hmm. Two, seeing that some of our school districts are struggling even right now to keep their doors open. And three, the kids don't stay in a silo of their school district. Many of these kids are playing on sports teams with kids from all different districts. Many of the kids come from other counties, particularly to some of our private schools, counties that have much higher rates of transmission than Montgomery County does right now. So there's no isolating a district. I think that that's a bit of a pipe dream. The reality on the ground is these kids are mixing in lots of different ways. So we felt the safest thing was just a 5 to 8 day pause for the whole county in the hopes that this would calm down a bit. And we are fully intending to allow any school that wants to offer in-person education on Monday, December the 7th, to go ahead and do so.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Dr. Valerie Arkush. She is chair of the Montgomery County Board of Commissioners. And the commissioners, although it wasn't unanimous, essentially said to the schools inside Montgomery County, and these are public and private schools, to go remote between November 23rd and December 6th. And you can join us.
Hey, Marty, could I just clarify? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
go
ahead. It was actually the county's Board of Health that voted to do that, and it was a unanimous decision. And I want people to understand that we have physicians on that board, including a pediatrician. We also have COOs of two major hospital systems in the county. This is a very informed group of individuals that made this unanimous decision.
And you agree with it, clearly?
I do agree with it.
Okay, fair. No. Thank you for that correction. And again, let me just make sure our listeners can join us. We're talking about specifically Montgomery County outside of Philadelphia, and send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us 1-888-477-9499. Here's a tweet from Kay. Is Montgomery County's indoor dining going to be closed like the rest of Philadelphia? Are you looking at other parts of the county to try to mitigate some of this spread?
We are looking at all aspects of business that's being conducted in Montgomery County really every day. And listeners should know that we are closing restaurants and places of business that are not in compliance with the state's business mitigation orders or not enforcing masking mandates, or where we've seen an outbreak. So we have had to ask several restaurants to temporarily close. And there's a graduated enforcement action. So I think the first time they have to close for 48 hours. If they are non-compliance again, they have to close for a week. So we have been staying on top of restaurants and other places like that. We've had a very serious outbreak associated with two ice hockey rinks, and both of those facilities are in the middle of now a 14-day closure. So we are working hard to close places where we have evidence of spread and have seen any kind of lack of compliance with the mitigation guidelines.
Yesterday, the Pennsylvania's Health Secretary, Dr. Rachel Levine, issued basically a mask mandate for the state of Pennsylvania, for the Commonwealth. Should we think more about mandates and enforcement of mandates?
I think that that sends a very important message to everybody in our community. And I will give you a perfect example. In more than one of our schools and workplaces, we have had transmission between individuals who were in a meeting And that meeting took place in a probably like your typical conference room, you know, that we would expect at any sort of workplace. And people were at some distance, they say 6 feet apart, but they were in a closed room for at least an hour. And they took their masks off for the course of the meeting. And we did see transmission in more than one instance in a situation like that. So I was very pleased to see the secretary call for keeping masks on, even indoors, even if you're more than 6 feet apart, when you're in a situation like that where you are with other people. Because in a closed room with a mask off, if anybody in that room is positive, there is a very strong likelihood that others will become infected by the virus.
I'm sure there were protests in front of your house. And I believe you're a parent, Dr. Arkush. But, you know, the parents that I talk to are tearing their hair out because it's impossible to work from home, have your children at home trying to learn online. Some children can do this better than others. Special needs children, obviously, there are extra things that a family has to think about. What do you say to these parents who just say, I cannot take it anymore?
Well, first of all, I do want to just state publicly that I support every American's right to peacefully protest. These parents and their children were peaceful. And I also want them to know that I respect them, that they are doing and advocating, for what they believe is best for their children. And I want to reiterate that we share the same goal, that I want these kids to be able to go to school also if their school district is willing to offer in-person school. Mm-hmm. And we believe, based on our data and talking to our school superintendents, that the way that we can have as many schools able to open is to get these transmission rates down and protect the schools by protecting their staff, their bus drivers, their custodians. You know, sometimes I think the parents forget it's a whole community that needs to be present in order for the school day to begin. So I am extremely sympathetic to these parents. I do have three children of my own. The youngest two just graduated from high school this past spring virtually. And one is going to college in person and one is not. One is going to college from upstairs in the bedroom. But it is incredibly difficult. And absolutely, for many students, it is not optimal to be online. When our Board of Health decided to proceed with this order, we did it with plenty of advance notice so that, you know, hopefully parents will have some time now to arrange for help or child care as they need it. We have also put a considerable amount of CARES Act funding into support for child care, even for school-aged children that families could apply for. And we're trying to help families stay on their feet as best we can and do everything we can to make sure that our schools are able to open on December the 7th.
I know you and others were responding to a spike after Halloween, and now it's Thanksgiving. And of course, in a couple of weeks, we're looking for the Christmas holidays. Do you anticipate doing something similar to protect against the spread of COVID-19 over the Christmas holidays?
Like every decision that we've made in Montgomery County since the beginning of this pandemic, we will look at our data from this time around Thanksgiving. We have several other holidays that we can compare it to, and we'll see if we believe that this pause in the in-person education is making a difference. If it does make a difference, it is something that we will consider. If it does not seem to make any kind of difference in the ability of schools to open on December the 7th, then we would not repeat it.
Here's an email from Deborah. She says, I'm really having trouble translating these terrifying case numbers into how I should think about the risks of going, let's say, to the grocery store or going for a walk with a friend. How far apart should you be from someone who is also wearing a mask? And I have to say, Dr. Arkush, that, you know, we've done so many shows about this virus, and we'll do plenty more because I think the public is still confused and has this sense of being overwhelmed by both lots of information, but then information that seems to contradict itself. Can you clarify that?
Yeah, you know, I just, Marty, you point out such an important thing, which is that the information has been changing. For 37 weeks, we've been battling this in Montgomery County, and you know, every few weeks we get a new piece of information or we learn something new about this virus. So the public is experiencing something that really they've never had to go through before, which is a brand new disease, extremely contagious, and a very rapidly changing situation. So it definitely feels like whiplash all the way around. So when it comes to masks, if you're outside, outside's always safer than inside. And if you're outside walking with someone, both of you should have a mask on, and you should try to stay 6 feet apart. That's the safest strategy. Outside, 6 feet apart, with both people having on masks, that should be a safe walk. In terms of grocery stores, I think what's important to know is that it does seem pretty clear that just a couple seconds of exposure, you know, walking by somebody in a grocery store aisle has not been linked to transmission of the virus. Now, if you're standing in line waiting to check out and it's a particularly long line and you're not feeling like people are appropriately social distancing and you think you might be in that line for, you know, 10, 15 minutes, I would try to get in another line or, you know, ask the store manager to space people out better. It's a combination of closeness and then the duration of that closeness that people have to think about.
And we're almost out of time here. We got lots of questions. One from Ted says, is Montgomery County working on getting more testing and making it more available? My wife and I have had a lot of trouble finding testing. And I wonder if you could speak to that.
Sure. So the county itself is operating six testing sites that are open Monday through Friday, and they're all different places around the county. And right now, those sites collectively are offering 500 tests a day, and we are about to expand that hopefully by next week or the following week. And those tests are no cost to the person, do not require a doctor's order, and will test anybody of any age. And that information is accessed through montcopa.org/COVID-19. And there's a button that says county testing information. That is testing, though. You do need to live in the county, work in the county, or go to school in the county. And then in addition to that, there's all the other, drugstores and urgent care centers, places like that, that are doing testing. And then some hospitals are doing testing, but usually that needs to come through a personal healthcare provider.
Well, I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. Dr. Valerie Arkush, Chair of the Montgomery County Board of Commissioners, thanks so much.
Thanks, Marty. Stay safe.
You too. And we've got Mark Zandi waiting in the wings. He's an economist. We'll talk about the effect of all these restrictions and shutdowns on the local economy. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Joining us now is Mark Zandi. He's chief economist at Moody's Analytics to talk about the impact of all these COVID-related restrictions and shutdowns on the economy, particularly on businesses that rely on customers like restaurants, bars, retail, entertainment, and gyms. The rise in coronavirus cases is directly linked to the economy. When the virus spikes, employment takes a hit. And adding to the crisis, Congress can't come to an agreement on a rescue package, leaving workers and employers wondering how they are going to pay their bills. Mark Zandi, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Good to be with you.
Nice to have you with us. And again, to our listeners, we want to make sure that you can join our conversation, have any of your questions or comments answered. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can always tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us 1-888-477-9499. Mark, looking back over the year, the kinds of ups and downs of the economy, can our economy take another hit if these cases continue to rise and restrictions shut down more businesses?
Well, it'd be tough. Obviously, here we are, and unemployment is still very high. It's almost a 7% unemployment rate, which is about as high as the unemployment rate gets at the peak in, on average in previous recessions. And, of course, it doesn't include all the millions of people who've stepped out of the workforce, not looking for work, and therefore not counted as unemployed because of the pandemic. And then millions more that, you know, still working but have suffered a pay cut. So very devastating in our impact on our economy. The economy is very, very fragile, and obviously another serious wave of infections, hospitalization, deaths is a real problem, particularly when we don't have any additional support coming from Washington, at least not anytime soon.
And I do want to get to that. Are we talking recession, depression? What's the right word to describe this moment that we're in?
I think the odds are pretty high that the economy stalls out here, meaning, you know, we had been getting a lot of jobs back. Still a long way to get all the jobs back we lost, but we were getting jobs back. But it feels like that recovery is going to stall out here at the very least. And the potential for backsliding here is high, that we start suffering some job loss. And that'll continue to be the case until either we get help from Washington or we get a vaccines that are effective and widely distributed and put this pandemic to an end.
Well, let me go back to the spring and the CARES Act. I don't know if money is still coming through the CARES Act. There was, of course, the Paycheck Protection Program. These were put into place in the spring to deal with this economic fallout from the pandemic. How effective were they in keeping the economy afloat?
They were effective. They were very helpful. The CARES Act was a very large fiscal rescue package passed in March, over $3 trillion. So for context, that's about 12-13% of GDP. I mean, that was bigger than the Recovery Act that was passed in the height of the financial crisis. So it was a very muscular response. If I were king for the day, I might have done it a little bit differently. But, you know, given the time constraints, I think it was a very good package. But all that support is now expired. It's gone. There has been a few other efforts to help the economy since the CARES Act, but all of those sources of support will expire by the end of this year. For example, a moratorium on rental eviction will go through December 31. So on January 1, the eviction process will begin for lots of folks that haven't been able to pay. You mentioned the Paycheck Protection Program. That was part of the CARES Act. That was designed specifically to help small businesses. Of the $3 trillion-plus in CARES Act money, $500 billion or so came through PPP. And that was very, very helpful, particularly to those restaurants and retailers and gyms and barbershops, you know, all the things you mentioned up top that are most vulnerable here. But that money is now gone. And so these smaller companies, businesses are really on their own here.
Well, as we know, I mean, it doesn't feel as if anything is going to get done in Congress the way things stand now. But Mark, if you had your way, and as you mentioned, you might have done the CARES Act slightly differently, but what do we need in order to keep people not employed, but certainly keep them from really going under, and also, of course, businesses as well?
Well, yeah, you know, you recall right before the election, the Trump administration, Secretary of Treasury Mnuchin, was negotiating with House Speaker Pelosi, and they were coalescing around a package, another package of about $2 trillion, mm-hmm. Smaller than the CARES Act, but still very substantive. And it included many of the same things that were in CARES, you know, just the idea being that the economy still needed help while the pandemic was raging. But that fell apart. But that would be a good place to go to start, in terms of addressing what's happening right now. So that would mean more money for unemployed through the unemployment insurance program. It might mean another round of stimulus checks. It certainly would mean more Paycheck Protection Program money for small businesses, so that they can survive the winter and don't have to lay off workers. More money for the airline industry. You know, obviously the airlines are on death's door here because of what's going on. And then more money for testing. Goodness knows we need that. For the educational school system to make it more viable for kids to ultimately get back to in-person learning. And the healthcare system. So, you know, lots of needs here. But those would be, you know, just basic elements of a package to get us to the other side of the pandemic.
Would $2 trillion cover it?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, a lot of unknowns, uncertainties here. We just don't know how this pandemic is going to play out, you know, how effective these vaccines are going to be, how quickly they can be distributed and adopted. But, you know, I think that's $2 trillion is a reasonably sized package. But, you know, obviously I could be wrong. It could turn out to be a little bit better, or things could turn out better than I'm anticipating or worse. if better, you know, that's okay. I mean, better to err on the side of providing too much help here than too little. And then if things turn out worse, then we'll have to come back and lawmakers will have to come back and revisit and hopefully continue to provide the necessary support to the economy till this pandemic is over. I think it's incumbent on lawmakers to provide that support as long as this pandemic is raging, and it's certainly raging.
It sure is. We've been talking about Philadelphia, Montgomery County. How much do state and local governments need in order to stay, frankly, functional? They rely on you know, tax revenue in many ways, and, of course, money from the federal government as well. But how desperate are these state and local governments?
Yeah, good point. I failed to mention that in the package of the laundry list of things I listed in terms of what needs help. But state and local governments clearly do. You know, because of their budget balance requirements, most states aren't able to go out and borrow money to help finance what they're doing. So in tough times, like during a pandemic, when tax revenues are plunging, they have this huge budget shortfall. They can't fill it in any other way if they don't get help from the federal government, except for cutting state and local government workers, which kind of doesn't make any sense, right? These are police, fire, emergency responders, hospital workers, you know, people you need at any time, but certainly in the middle of the pandemic. Programs, you know, obviously a lot of those programs go to the hardest hit in our communities that are suffering the most because of the pandemic, and ultimately government services. So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And so I do think the federal government should step up and provide additional support to state and local governments. And you know, this there's been a lot of political constraints here, a lot of concern that this kind of help would only help governors from Democratic states and not Republican states. But I think that kind of argument, criticism, didn't make sense at any point in time, but it makes no sense now because the pandemic is worse in much of the Midwest and the South, where, you know, it's governors are more Republican than Democrat. But in terms of the numbers, we're calculating that to fill the budget shortfall that state and local governments are going to face through the end of their 22 fiscal year, which would be June of 2022, so over the next roughly 2 years, they would require somewhere around $300 to $400 billion to fill that hole, just to make them even, so that they don't have to rush to cut. And by the way, this is a real vulnerability in the economy right now, because Congress, the Trump administration, couldn't get together and pass a piece of legislation that would provide funding for state and local governments. They're now going to have to make some pretty tough decisions, and I think we will see some job losses there, and program cuts and services cuts, you know, over the next few months.
So dispiriting. That's Mark Zandi. He's a chief economist at Moody's Analytics. The third of three guests in this hour, we are talking about the impact of the coronavirus lockdowns and restrictions on the economy, local economy, on individual workers and individual business owners. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Mark, I'm sure like everybody, and perhaps even more than everybody, than most people, I should say, is, you know, you just worry about restaurants and retail and businesses that rely on customers coming into their, you know, place of work. And what is going to happen to those people, the people who work for those businesses? And how much do you think this pandemic is really reshaping our entire economy, knowing that, 70% of our economy relies on consumer spending?
Yeah, you know, I'm worried about restaurateurs. I mean, they are particularly vulnerable here. You know, you're in the middle of the winter. You know, we're in Philly. You can't eat outside. You have to be indoors, and that now can't happen.
Right.
So there is no additional paycheck protection program money for these business owners to kind of navigate through. They've already been struggling with this for now ten months. So we're going to see more failures. I've seen estimates of over 100,000 restaurants nationwide have already failed or gone into bankruptcy. I suspect we're going to see at least that, you know, over the next few months. So it's going to be a particularly difficult time. And obviously, you know, the restaurants are key to the fabric of our city, right? I mean, especially every city.
Philadelphia.
Yeah. I mean,
sure.
The restaurant scene really critical to just making Philly. So, you know, I really fear for restaurateurs. It's going to be particularly difficult for them. You know, and obviously lots of other businesses too. You know, think of you're an owner of a gym or, you know, a beauty salon or barber shop or, you know, there's a lot of mom and pop retailers. Which goes to your broader question. I do think the pandemic, one of the dark, long tails of the pandemic is it's going to significantly reduce, impair our small businesses, which are key to, you know, again, our lives and our economic success. And it will concentrate more market share in the hands of bigger companies. I mean, think about the retail sector. I mean, right? You got a lot of mom and pop retailers, brick and mortar retailers, already struggling before this pandemic because of online competition. They're now out of business. You had a lot of mid-sized, publicly traded, you know, pretty good-sized retailers that have filed for bankruptcy, and then you got the big guys that are, you know, they're benefiting from it, right? I mean, you know, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, Target, and they now have greater market share. And that dynamic I just described is evident to some degree or another in lots of different industries. So that has all kinds of potential implications on the other side, sure, of this pandemic.
Well, it seems like, you know, we'll be the United States of Amazon before we know it. Here's a question from Adrian. Why don't the banks put a moratorium on interest payments until later next year so people aren't evicted? If anyone can take a hit, it's the banks.
Well, there is a moratorium on mortgage payments for people who have loans from Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, VA, USDA, government-backed institutions. And you know, roughly speaking, three-quarters of all mortgage loans outstanding are backed by the government and are able to get mortgage forbearance. And that forbearance is available, I believe, through March of 2021. So that's one thing that is in place, and if you need help, you can avail yourself of that. Just call up your mortgage servicer, the folks you're paying your mortgage payment to every month, and ask for that help if you're being affected by the pandemic. And I'm hopeful that, you know, the new Biden administration will extend that moratoria, you know, depending on what's going on when we get to March. If you're a renter, that's a different story. And by the way, that mortgage forbearance, the banks are providing that forbearance. And even if you don't have a loan from Fannie, Freddie, or FHA, you should call up your mortgage servicer. You know, if your bank is Wells Fargo or Quicken or whomever it may be. They will, in many cases, work with you and provide some help. If you're a renter, that's a different story. There is a nationwide moratorium on rental eviction through the end of this year, and that will expire January 1 in all likelihood. Now hopefully the new incoming Biden administration will send a strong signal saying they're going to continue to extend that rental eviction moratorium once they get into office, and that'll give, you know, renters and their landlords, a sense that they should not begin the eviction process. So hopefully that'll be the case. But that does beg another really key issue question. What about all that back rent? It's not like,
sure,
these folks are going to get out of having to pay that rent. So hopefully when the Biden administration is in place and you have a new Congress, we get into late January, early February, we get a piece of legislation that provides a lot of things I just talked about, but also establishes let's call it a rental assistance fund, you know, money to help these hard-pressed renters so that they, you know, aren't stuck behind the financial eight ball when the eviction moratorium ends and they all hold that back rent. So hopefully that will happen.
That's super helpful. Mark Zandi, as always, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Sure, anytime. Take care, Marty.
You too, Mark. And he's chief economist at Moody's Analytics. Again, the third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times talking about the COVID-19 pandemic, and with Mark Zandi talking about some of the economic impacts. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, and you can also find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us.